Jakarta, Indonesia. Here is Voice of Indonesia with English program. Presenting news, information, and entertainment from Indonesia. You can listen to our program through shortwave 3325 kHz and 4755 kHz. Online streaming, voanews.id, and at RI Digital Mobile Application. Voice of Indonesia, from Indonesia to the world.
Hello and welcome to the news on Voice of Indonesia. These are the headlines. Indonesia upholds free and active foreign policy with firm approach in first year of Prabowo-Gibran administration. Indonesia's economy shows strong growth in Prabowo-Gibran first year. I'm Ray and this is the news in details. As Prabowo-Gibran's administration completes its first year in office, policy analysts stated that Indonesia continues to steadfastly uphold its free and active foreign policy doctrine while adopting a noticeably more assertive and strategic posture in global affairs. Desi Anugranov has the details.
As the administration of President Prabowo Subianto and Vice President Gibran Rakabuming marks its first years, Indonesia's foreign diplomacy is assessed as remaining consistent with the principle of being free and active. However, its approach is characterized by firmer, more strategic and proactive step on the international stage. International observer Agung Nurwijoyo says that the government is striving to maintain Indonesia's balanced position between the two world superpower, the United States and China. He stated this in an interview with Voice of Indonesia in Jakarta on Monday.
We have to have such a balanced position between Beijing and Washington. And I think by making such a connection, okay, in one case we are joining BRICS, and in another case we have also need to be a good partner by the United States. I think this is how free and active foreign policy, how we run it. Yeah, by not choice one of the bloc, but trying to be balanced between these two rivalry, and this is the things that we need to take care of.
According to Agung, Indonesia's consistency on the global stage is also reflected in its contribution toward peace effort. He highlighted President Prabowo's presence at the United Nations, where he called for an end to Israel's genocide in Gaza.
As a form of Indonesian consistency and contribution, not only consistency, but also contributions to the world peace efforts, that I think this is also as the main part of policy that made by the President Prabowo, yeah, specifically toward how we are trying to stop Israel's genocide in Gaza, Palestine, and the presence of Indonesia, Indonesia's consistency contribution, I think so far are important for Indonesia to demonstrate at the summit.
Agung added that Indonesia's participation in the Sharm el-Sheikh Peace Summit in Egypt further underscores the government's active stance in promoting world peace. According to him, these steps are a tangible manifestation of the implementation of the free and active foreign policy that Indonesia is pursuing globally. Desi Anugrano, Voice of Indonesia.
Let's listen to the interview for further details.
At the Service Voice of Indonesia from Indonesia to the world, listener, today marks an important moment, exactly 1 year of the administration of President Prabowo Subianto and Vice President Gibran Rakabuming Raka. Over the past year, the government has continued to move forward in realizing the vision of Indonesia Emas, or Golden Indonesia. And the Ministry of Foreign Affairs plays its role in achieving that vision from strengthening Indonesia's position on the global stage, safeguarding national economic interests, to expanding Indonesia's contribution to global peace. And we can see a lot of milestones and diplomatic achievement has been made throughout this year. And to discuss further the course of Indonesia's diplomacy in the first year of our president's administration, now we are connected with Pak Agung, the international observer from the University of Indonesia. Good morning, Pak Agung.
Good morning, Steve. How are you?
I'm fine. And what about you?
I'm fine.
Okay, so I'd like to get down to business. I'd like to start from the statement on the annual press statement from the government saying that Indonesia's positioning will return to its stature as a great nation, a trusted partner, and also a good neighbor. How strong was this statement, and what can you say about this?
Okay, I think this is very important, yeah. And Pak Prabowo always say in the international forum that Indonesia 1,000 friends too few, one enemy too many. I think Pak Prabowo in his presidency, it's a part of the continuity of his own Indonesian core principles. And I think in this case, by those statement, great nation, trusted partner, yeah, a good neighbor, I think that Prabowo is trying to expect it to maintain Indonesia's long-standing constitutionally mandate bebas aktif, yeah, free and active foreign policy. And this is, it means Indonesia is trying to avoid a formal military alliance and maintaining strategic autonomy, especially US and China rivalry. And I think also after the statement by the Pak Prabowo during his own, at the beginning of his presidency, Pak Prabowo also, and after that, choose, yeah, Pak Sugiono as the Minister of Foreign Affairs, of course. I think that this is a sign from Pak Prabowo, a way how he is trying to take in charge directly in foreign policy. And also he choose three vice ministers, yeah, Pak Anies Mata, Pak Tata, Armando Tan Nasir, and Pak Arief Hafaz Ubroseno. And frankly speaking, while Pak Prabowo choose Pak Anies Mata, I think in here in Indonesia, because we have a strong aspiration from the Muslim society, yeah, public have a huge aspiration by the appointment of Pak Anies Mata, that Indonesia would be much more focused on giving such a contribution on Islamic world and the Middle East at large. And also, it's also seen by how Pak Prabowo, how his first foreign visit, yeah, by Pak Prabowo, it's also something interesting and strategic. While Pak Prabowo was visit China, United States, and G20, and also have an aspiration to join with such a BRICS, more active in multilateral, having such a joint in this some emergency meeting, and having such an active role in many humanitarian issues like in Gaza. And so I think this is a way in the first year, there's a lot of things that in the terms of regarding the issue of the foreign policy, we have such a many steps, yeah, as a good steps in order to understanding the presence and contribution of Indonesia at the global stage.
And one of the many steps is about joining BRICS. And how do you see Indonesia benefit from joining BRICS so far until this very second? And what about the challenges Indonesia must consider as a young, aka new member of BRICS?
Yeah, I think Indonesia's, while Indonesia has a huge aspiration to join BRICS, in its own foreign policy, yeah, under free and active doctrine, I think this is strategic calculus for Indonesia. It is not something not as binary in or out question, but as a fluid and strategic calculations. And how the decision by the government to join BRICS is not something simple, I think. it involves a careful weighing of pros and cons, yeah, perfectly reflecting its multi-alignment strategy, because we understand that we are now in the uncertainty world between the US and China rivalry, of course. And I think we have such as many benefits by joining BRICS here. For example, like it's a way for us to have such an economic diversifications by opening a broader access to the economic access. Yeah, we are not only depend on the traditional markets. We can open non-traditional markets by joining BRICS and opening at large to the other countries. And then this is something also important for us to build such a this connection. And also, this is something much more principal. Yeah, by joining BRICS, I think this is a way for us to strengthening the global south voices by joining this BRICS, because somehow BRICS is seen as a counterweight to the G7, for example. And I think we have to at large using this forum to give such a benefit for Indonesia, access to market, investment, and so on and so forth. But we also need to understand that there's a lot of challenges here, Mas Steve, by joining BRICS. For example, we have to always care and aware about the China dominance problem. Yeah, this is something important. I think that the term of China dominance problem, this is the single biggest concern by joining BRICS. And this is Indonesia, I think we have to worry of BRICS being perceived as China's led bloc. I think, and this is one of the biggest challenges by joining BRICS, and this is how the challenge for the Pak Prabowo to interpret how we play under the doctrine of free and active foreign policy.
Okay, I'd like to have a follow-up on that statement regarding the China's, how do you call it? Is it China's domination or?
China domination.
Yeah, okay. About that China domination, you said that the government needs to be wary about it. And actually, from your point of view, what kind of move that Indonesia can do or probably needs to do?
Yeah, we have to have such a balanced position between Beijing and Washington. And I think by making such a connection, okay, in one case we are joining BRICS, and in another case we have also need to be a good partner by the United States. I think this is how free and active foreign policy, how we run it, yeah, by not choice one of the bloc, but trying to be balanced between these two rivalry, and this is the things that we need to take care of.
Okay, so Indonesia needs to reaffirm that part that we are joining BRICS. Yeah. Doesn't mean that we fall under China, but instead we're just playing our free and active role, meaning that we're going to be there for all sides in the world. And moving on to the next one of the hottest international issue is about the state of Palestine. We know Indonesia has been championing this state since a long time, and recently we also joined the Sharm el-Sheikh Peace Summit in Egypt. How do you, what can you say about Indonesia's contribution to this summit?
Yeah, I think regarding the Indonesia's presence in that summit, I think this is something important as a form of Indonesian consistency and contribution. Not only consistency, but also contributions to the world peace efforts. That I think this is also as the main part of policy that made by the President Prabowo. Yeah, specifically toward how we are trying to stop Israel's genocide in Gaza, Palestine. But also we have to aware that it must be noted very clearly that these peace efforts do not automatically erase Israel's sins, yeah, relating to genocide, ethnic cleansing, and apartheid policies. And the presence of Indonesia and Indonesia's consistency contribution, I think, so far are important for Indonesia to demonstrate at the summit, yeah, because one of the obstacles and challenges is those summits, Sharm el-Sheikh summit, did not originate from a UN mechanism, but rather from a US United States idea for resolving Gaza war. And in this case, I think Indonesia has such an there is an intention in order to Indonesia to strengthen the role of in diplomacy, Indonesian posture to resolving in the Gaza war, and then I think we have to joining this stream. But furthermore, I think also it is a way for Indonesia to as an implementation of free and active foreign policy carried out by Indonesia by Pak Prabowo. Not only by those statement, but Indonesia is trying to be much more present, not only giving such a aid, but also is trying to give such a contribution by the send is trying to sending peacekeeping operations. And I think this is a way for Indonesia is much more present in this case here. And we have also need to understand that the Sharm el-Sheikh summit is for me in the peace studies we understand this is a way we understand as the negative peace. Negative peace means the absence of war, the absence of violence, and this is the first step until we achieve the positive peace. Positive means we live in harmony, side by side, and so on and so forth. And this is a long way to go, but this is the first step that we need to achieve, that we need to make real commitment from the actors on the ground to stop the war, to stop the violence. I think this is the key for us.
Okay, so the negative peace is the early step, and we are aiming for the positive peace itself, which is living in harmony. And to make sure that can be achieved, what kind of leverage does Indonesia have in moving or driving a lot of countries into making sure that this happen? What do we need to do?
Yeah, first of all, I think we need to understand that there are things that differentiate this agreement from the previous ones. I have two points, Mastiff. The first one, the significance of having such a guarantors. Yeah. In this summit, in this agreement, we have not only United States, but we also have Egypt, Qatar, and Turkey. Yeah. And this is so significant. The presence of guarantors, for me, is important to convince the warring parties to stop the war. After all, this is not only Israel that needs security, but for me, Gaza and Palestine also need the security itself, including protection from the threat of structured violence carried out by Israel, because after the ceasefire agreement has been achieved on the last Friday, after that, every day, we still hear how Israel consistently attack the Gazan people. This is the first one. And the second one, also something that we need to take into note is the presence of observers of our peacekeeping forces, or we call it stabilization force in the term of the agreement. And the deployment mechanism might not be as the UN mechanism, so it's purely different with the normal mechanism. So a special mechanism with the U.S. in something is in there, and the presence of this mechanism is something important, and this is something different that we are having than the last agreement that has been achieved.
Okay, so of course Indonesia's diplomacy not only for their free an active role in the global community, but also we would like to bring forward the best interests of our own nation. Right now we are going to talk about the agendas of our country, but still related to the diplomacy and also global collaboration. Let's start from the achieving food and energy self-sufficiency. How far is Indonesia in achieving this area in terms with the collaboration with global community?
Yeah, I think under Prabowo's presidency, this is one of the Indonesia's strategic directions, yeah, yeah, including free lunch program, of course. But besides this program, we also heard about the, for example, like food estate program, yeah, as a part of strategic direction by the Prabowo. And in these policies, I think this is as a continuity. After Pak Prabowo action as a Minister of Defense, yeah, under Pak Jokowi's presidency, and this continuity exists until now, while Pak Prabowo having such a concern in food and security self-sufficiencies. And the first one, I think we need to take into note in the continuation of the food estate program as the one of the cornerstone of the Pak Prabowo's policy. And I think in this case, even though it's something hard, but we are trying to boost production of many staple crops, crops like rice, corn in Kalimantan, in Central Kalimantan, and so on and so forth. But I think one of the things that we need to be taking the notes is we need to move from not only food estates but to agricultural innovation hubs, and in this case, we need to be much more, have such a collaboration with the other countries in order to enlarge our technology transfers, because we also have problems with the climate, for example, with the market access. And I think so far, our direction in foreign policy, while Pak Prabowo is visiting the other countries, not only the great powers, but also non-traditional market like the Middle East countries, the program, the direction of food estate, MBG, like that, is something that we also, a part of our interest, is a part of our diplomacy while we are visiting the other countries. And I think this is a good way in order to enlarge and be much more independent for our countries.
And apparently we still have three more sectors to talk about, but the time is kind of limited. So, sir, I still have three more sectors. The first one is health, and then economy, and then also the protection of Indonesian citizens. Maybe you want to comment about the achievements and also the rooms for improvements in one of the sectors that you choose.
I think the first one is economic, and then the second one, how we protect our citizens outside there. And the third one, of course, about the health diplomacy. But it doesn't mean health diplomacy is less prioritized than the others, yeah. Because when we learn about from the COVID-19, we learn a lot. But health diplomacy, I think, hand in hand with the humanitarian diplomacy, yeah. Because when we are talking of health diplomacy, we also, in this case, we also need to aware with the humanitarian issues. But the most important things is how we enlarge it, but our economic diplomacy, and this is and it is the continuation from the Jokowi's presidency, and this is a way that not only for Indonesia but the other countries also facing these situations. But the most important things, all of those policies need to base by the foreign our foreign policy doctrine, which is free and active foreign policy, and this is the way how we are trying to sailing in the very uncertainty sea, I think, yeah, uncertainty world, because there's a lot of things that will be happen, and we have to mitigate the situation to be much more give such a benefit for Indonesia, I think.
Okay, thank you very much, Pak Agung Nurwijoyo. We got what we needed. Thank you very much for joining us in the Voice of Indonesia.
Thank you again for having me.
Listener, that is the International Observer of the University of Indonesia, Pak Agung Nurwijoyo, and you can listen again to this on our YouTube channel, VOI Official.
A senior government official has reported robust economic progress for Indonesia in the first year of President Prabowo Subianto administration, citing a 5.12% growth rate in the second quarter and controlled inflation, with optimism for continued strength throughout year-end. Anissa Algrita has the details.
Deputy for Coordination of State-Owned Enterprise Management and Development at the Coordinating Ministry for Economic Affairs, Ferry Irawan, on Monday, October 20, 2025, presented Indonesia's economic achievements during the first year of the Prabowo Subianto Gibran Raka Buming administration. In a discussion titled Economic Progress Towards Astachita in Jakarta, he stated that the national economic growth reached 5.12% in the second quarter of 2025, while third quarter data will be announced in early November.
Earlier, several points regarding what we have achieved up to October were already conveyed by Pak Haryo. One of them is the economic growth in Q2 at 5.12.
Furthermore, Ferry added that the government has also successfully maintained the inflation rate at 2.65% as of September 2025. The government estimates that inflation will remain around 2.5% until the end of 2025.
According to data in September, it's 2.65. Until the end of the year, we are confident we can still achieve around 2.5 plus minus 1%, around 2.5%.
This year, Indonesia's economic growth is targeted at 5.2% according to the state budget, or APBN, and 5.4% based on the results of government discussion with the House of Representatives, or DPR. This government is optimistic that this target can be achieved or even grown higher through short-term and medium-term strategies. These strategies include strengthening productive sectors, industrial downstreaming, and expanding employment opportunities to drive sustainable growth. Anissa Audrita, Voice of Indonesia.
As the administration of President Prabowo Subianto and Vice President Gibran Raka Buming marks its first year, Indonesia's economic stability is seen as remaining strong amid global uncertainty. Irfan Shoki Baik, Dean of the Faculty of Economics and Management at IPB University, stated that President Prabowo's leadership has successfully maintained the country's economic growth through effective fiscal policies. Ofra Regina has the details.
Dean of the Faculty of Economic and Management at IPB University, Irfan Shoki Baik, assessed that President Prabowo Subianto's leadership has successfully maintained the stability of Indonesia's economic growth despite ever-changing global dynamic. He shared this view in an interview with Voice of Indonesia in Jakarta on Monday. He explained that the government's fiscal policy has been effective in sustaining the pace of national economic growth.
We see that at this moment, the Prabowo administration is able to maintain the level of economic growth. Yeah, and to me, I think until the end of this year, they still be able to maintain the growth rate at plus minus 5.1%, 5 to 5.1%. That's according to our projections. It is because we have observed for the past month there was a breakthrough in the policy of the Minister of Finance to stimulate the economy by utilizing the fund that was saved in the bank deposit account.
Furthermore, Irfan highlighted the government's effort to strengthen the micro, small, and medium enterprises sector as a key driver of the national economy. He stated that the policy of channeling funds directly to MSME players will positively impact welfare at the grassroots level.
More than 1 million SMEs will be injected the fund. This will, of course, stimulate economy at the ground. Economy at the bottom level. And President Prabowo, I think he also, you know, obsessed with his ambition to elevate the level of this MSME, yeah, micro, small and medium enterprises, yeah, to get the higher rank, higher status. And by injecting them with this allocated fund, I believe this can stimulate economy to grow further.
Irfan added that the government's current economic policies reflect an inclusive development direction that favors small-scale businesses. He noted that this approach aligned with President Prabowo's vision to strengthen national economic independence and enhance Indonesia's competitiveness on the global stage. Over Regional Voice of Indonesia.
The Minister of Environment, Hanif Faisal, firmly instructed all members of his staff to prioritize resolving the national waste problem. He stated this at the reflection on one-year performance of the Ministry of Environment, Environmental Management Agency in Jakarta on Monday. The full report will be presented by Putri Cahya Purnama.
The Minister of Environment and Head of the Environmental Management Agency, Hanif Faisal, instructed all members of his staff to prioritize resolving the national waste problem. At the reflection on 1 year of performance of the Ministry of Environment, Environmental Management Agency event in Jakarta on Monday, he said that the national waste problem has received serious attention from President Prabowo Subianto since the beginning of his term.
Therefore, on today's occasion, aside from other environmental issues we can deliver to the regions, I really want all of us to focus our remaining time on handling the resolution of our national waste issue.
While appreciating the performance of regional governments that have started implementing sanitary landfills or control landfills, the minister emphasized that these efforts are not yet sufficient. According to him, fundamental solutions must be carried out from the upstream part of waste management, not just at the final disposal sites.
Almost all of them have implemented sanitary landfills or controlled landfills. This is a tremendous step, but it is not enough. We must resolve the substance of this waste management starting from the upstream.
Based on the latest assessment, Hanif Faisal revealed that national waste management is still below a score of 50 points, which is far from the true Adipura standard. Adipura is an award from the Indonesian government to regencies or cities deemed successful in sustainability, managing urban cleanliness and the environment. He added that to address this gap, the minister assigned the directors to take on the role of direct mentors in the regions. He urged that at least 42 regencies or cities should be able to achieve this Adipura Award this year, for which there are still about 3 months left. Putri Cahaya Purnama, Voice of Indonesia.
The government has designated 7 creative economy sectors as main priorities until 2029, with 4 of them, such as games and application, showing rapid growth. This optimism has reinforced the realizations of investment, which has reached 90 trillion rupiah in the first half, far exceeding initial projections. Ramashipke Pratama has the details.
The Indonesian government has designated 7 creative economy subsectors as main priorities to be developed during the 2024 to 2029. 4 of them are assessed to be experiencing very rapid growth. In a statement received by RRI Voice of Indonesia recently, the country's Minister of Creative Economy, Teuku Rifki Harsya, stated that the 7 priority sectors are fashion, culinary, crafts, games, applications, music, and film, which includes animation and video. Fashion, culinary, and crafts are prioritized because of the size of their workforce and their contribution to the economy, including exports, which is the highest. But there are 4 sectors that are also developing rapidly, even though their value is not yet significant, namely games, digital applications, then film, including animation and music. So these 7 priority subsectors are the ones that will be boosted again for these 5 years. On the other hand, the Ministry of Creative Economy is optimistic that the realization of creative economy investment this year will exceed the target. According to Rifki Harsha, investment achievement in the first half of 2025 has reached 66% of the initial 2025 target of 136 trillion rupiah, or about $8.2 billion. It is achievable because the target for 2025 is 136 trillion rupiah in the creative economy investment. Today, in the first half, it's already 90 trillion rupiah. God willing, it will be achieved because this is also already more than 50%, precisely 66% of the target in the first 6 months. This confidence is also supported by a number of positive achievements on the global stage. Rifki cited the success of the animated film Jumbo, which has been screened in dozens of countries, and the expansion of the Indonesian origin frozen yogurt franchise Sour Sally to the Philippines. Ramasidki Pratama, Voice of Indonesia.
National oil lifting is showing positive performance, recording a figure that has exceeded the target set in 2025 state revenue and expenditure budget. This achievement is a strong indicator of this increase in domestic energy production. At the Young Entrepreneurs Association, the Nantara Indonesia Business Forum 2025 in Jakarta, Monday, the Minister of Energy and Mineral Resources, Bahlil Lahadalia, announced that the realization of crude oil lifting in the September-October 2025 period had reached 619,000 barrels per day. Meanwhile, the average lifting from January to October 2025 stood at 607,000 BOPD.
Alhamdulillah, saya laporkan kepada teman-teman IPMI per hari ini.
Thank God, I report to my friends at IPMI. As of today, our lifting in September to October has reached 619,000 barrels per day, and the average from January to October has reached around 607,000 barrels per day. So it has already exceeded the target from the 2025 state budget.
Jadi sudah melampaui target dari APBN 2025.
The oil lifting target in the 2025 APBN was previously set at 605,000 BOPD. Bahlil Lahadalia stated that with the realization being higher than the target, the government views this as a momentum to continue pushing for efficiency and attracting investment in the upstream oil and gas sector. He also reaffirmed the government's commitment to maintaining national energy resilience and independence. Strategic steps, including the acceleration of natural resources downstreaming, are continuously encouraged so that the added value can be felt evenly by all regions in Indonesia. Cabinet Secretary Teddy Indra Wijaya reported significant progress, revealing that over 100 Sekolah Rakyat are operational and slated for official inauguration by President Prabowo Subianto by the end of the year. Anissa Algrita has the details.
Cabinet Secretary Teddy Indra Wijaya conducted a direct visit to the Sekolah Rakyat Menengah Atas 33 in South Tangerang on Sunday, October 19, 2025. This visit aimed to monitor the progress of the Sekolah Rakyat or People's Schools program, an initiative of the President designed to open up educational access for all Indonesian children. In his press statement, Teddy revealed the significant progress of the program. According to him, more than 100 Sekolah Rakyat are planned to be inaugurated directly by President Prabowo Subianto by the end of this year.
So, the essence of the Sekolah Rakyat program initiated by the President is that 165 schools are already operational this year and will be inaugurated by the year's end. This is one of the many schools that the Minister of Social Affairs and I have visited directly. And here, there are 138 children.
Furthermore, Teddy explained that this program, which has been running for 3 months, pays attention to the children's basic needs. This ranges from decent dormitories, nutritious meals 3 times a day, health guarantees, to life skills training. According to Teddy, this comprehensive approach demonstrates the government's commitment not only to educate but also to nurture and empower the younger generation to be able to explore their potential.
So earlier we saw some can speak English, some can practice martial arts, some can sing, some can paint. Their paintings are excellent, and that is one of their hidden talents. Well, this is the function of the Sekolah Rakyat, as the minister explained earlier. The president wants all Indonesian children to have the right and the ability to attend school through schools prepared by the government, in this case, the Sekolah Rakyat.
The Sekolah Rakyat program initiated by President Prabowo Subianto aims to reduce the school dropout rate and provide opportunities for children from underprivileged families to continue their education. Teddy emphasized that the successful implementation of this program is due to the synergy between the Ministry of Social Affairs and a number of other related ministries. Anissa Audrita, Voice of Indonesia.
The 40th Trade Expo Indonesia, a 5-day annual trade exhibition in Tangerang Regency, Banten, officially concluded on Sunday. In his closing remarks, Indonesia's Minister of Trade Budi Santoso announced that the event exceeded its target. It was attended by more than 1,600 exhibitors, surpassing the goal of 1,500, and welcome over 34,000 visitors from 131 countries.
Trade Expo tahun 2005 dikunjungi oleh 34,534.
Trade Expo 2025 was visited by 34,550 people from 131 countries. That includes Indonesia as well, meaning both international and domestic visitors. This number is higher than the target, which was 30,000 people.
Jumlah tersebut lebih tinggi dari yang ditargetkan, yaitu 30,000 orang.
Minister Santoso added that the total transactions recorded during the event reached $22.8 billion, a significant increase from the previous year's target of $16.5 billion. The services sector accounted by the majority of its volume. India was the top country transaction volume, followed by the Netherlands, Vietnam, the Philippines, and China. Listeners, it concludes today's news bulletin from the Voice of Indonesia, bringing you the latest updates from Indonesia to the world.
Maju, 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 maju cintaku. Seringku berharap dirimu memaafkanku, dan kita berdua akan bersama cinta. Namun ku sadar semua hanya angan-anganku semata. Cinta, oh ternyata diriku tak mampu tanpa dirimu. Maafkanlah diriku, terimalah sesalku yang tulus dariku.
Listener, you are still here in Voice of Indonesia, where you are about to listen to Indonesian Wonder, only on Voice of Indonesia.
Listener, have you ever imagined what if your death was celebrated by many of your peers and everyone around you? Imagine, there's a parade around town after your death, where crowds of people play music and dances. However, all this is done with pure love and no grudge at all. In Bali, the deceased are paraded to the afterlife for a sacred cremation ritual called Ngaben. Ngaben is a Balinese cremation ritual. In Balinese Hinduism, they believe one soul cannot move on until the body is properly purified by fire. So, this cremation ritual is an honorable duty. The deceased are being placed in a bowl-shaped coffin for males, or cow-shaped for females, and then paraded around town, carried by a group of people from the family home accompanied by a line of women with offerings on their head to a public cremation site, where there is a cremation pagoda tower or wadu. The body will then be cremated along the coffin and the tower. In the West, people attend funerals in black and silence. In Ngaben, everything is louder and more colorful. It is full of chants and prayers, and traditional Balinese music played in gamelan and dance performances. Everyone participating will wear traditional garbs. Sometimes the ceremony will be held for more than one body, and so lots of family members will participate. The ceremony, however, will not be held right away after someone is passing, and can happen weeks, months, even years after. The family might need to save money or wait for the right day, as chosen by the priest. Sometimes, you can see the Ngaben ceremony when visiting Bali. If you are curious about it, please be polite. Avoid avoid wearing casual clothes or getting too close to the cremation, as you can disturb the ritual and disrespect the departed. With a funeral ceremony being held in the most unique ways of festivity and thick of Hinduism, Raben is a cultural heritage that makes Bali a must-visit once in a lifetime. Listener, that is the Indonesian wonder of Raben, Bali.
Of Indonesia, the overseas service of Radio Republic Indonesia, broadcast in 9 language services: English, French, German, Dutch, Spanish, Arabic, Mandarin, Japanese, and Indonesian. Voice of Indonesia is broadcast via shortwave 3325 kHz and 4755 kHz, and via streaming on voanews.id and RRE Digital on mobile application. We present studies program for you. Diplomatic Forum, Intercession, Indonesian Wonder, Miscellany, Let's Speak Bahasa Indonesia, Indonesian Pop and Regional Songs, International Musical Entertainment, as well as news and information about Indonesia and abroad. Voice of Indonesia, from Indonesia to the world.
Boy listener, right now you are going to listen to Music Corner only on Voice of Indonesia.
Voice of Indonesia.
Listener, today's edition of Music Corner presents a traditional song called Gado Gado Semarang, composed by Kelly Puspita. The song lyrics mention that the name Semarang in the province of Central Java, Indonesia, comes from the word Asam Arang, which means rare acid. Semarang is a coastal city, so many foreigners drop by the city. Well, listener, let's enjoy the song Gado Gado Semarang by Retno Indah. Happy listening!
Thank you so much, boy listener, for accompanying me in this 1 hour broadcast. But don't go anywhere, because after this there will be a lot more program and information that will accompany you in the next hours of Voice of Indonesia. And don't forget to send your critique, suggestion and also information through our social media and Facebook account, The Voice of Indonesia, Twitter account at VOI Indonesia, Instagram and TikTok in VOI double underscore official. We also have our email address in VOI at voinews.id. And also, our WhatsApp number in +62 821 2381 2130. Thank you so much, boy listener, for accompanying me. My name is Ray, and always stay tuned with us in Voice of Indonesia, from Indonesia to the world.